Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of our Magnum Opus podcast. Now, as we start the summer months and people have more and more time outside of school, we wanted to jump off of this very successful train that was our music theory trilogy, which was our three-part introduction to music theory that took us all the way from the basics, such as identifying each note of a scale, all the way through chord structures and how to compose your very own chorale. Now, what we're going to look at today is music history, and we're going to take a very broad overview. We're going to take a look at the Western music, specifically over the past two millennia. Now, music theory can be broken down into several different subcategories. We're going to explore what each of those categories are, some of the big identifying characteristics of those periods, what happened to change from one period to the other, why each one was so important, and of course, we'll highlight some main composers as well. So, strap on in. We're going to go back thousands and thousands of years to the age of prehistoric music. And prehistoric music, which was once more commonly called primitive music, is essentially the name given to all music produced in pre-literate cultures, pretty much before history or prehistory. Now, due to the very nature of the music, we don't actually know the origin of any of this because it occurred prior to recorded history. So this is a very general term, but we do know that ancient traditional Native American music could be characterized as prehistoric. Ancient traditional African drumming can be originated as prehistoric music. We do know music originated, was very, very strong part of the culture of Egypt and also many of the Orients as well. Now, the prehistoric age of music is pretty neat because we don't know. There's a lot of uncertainties. We don't know what the oldest instrument was, but we can take a couple guesses. In 2008, several archaeologists actually discovered a bone flute in caves in Germany. And this flute is about 35,000 years old. And it has five holes and it's shaped in a V. It's actually made out of a vulture wing bone. So it's shaped like a V and just has five simple notes. We don't really know how in tune it was because 35,000 years has caused it to decay a little bit. But that is not the oldest instrument ever discovered. We currently believe that the Dive Babe flute, which was a cave bear femur, is the oldest instrument ever created and used for musical purpose. This is believed to be between 50 and 60,000 years old. And it was produced by the Neanderthals. So picture that, music so old that it was from a currently extinct species. However, we can also only guess, because the human voice could have theoretically been used long before this flute from 50 and 60,000 years ago, even if it was something as simple as humming, or clicking, or whistling. Anything that could produce music melody could be considered the oldest instrument of mankind. Now we move past the prehistoric era of music, and we enter what is called the ancient music era. Ancient music is the name that is given to music that just follows the prehistoric era. Now, the oldest known song was written in cuneiform, and it was from 1400 BC, so about 3,400 years ago. And its origins were actually in Syria. Now, again, we discover more instruments, such as double pipes or ancient bagpipes. There's Indian classical music. Lots of Greece music that's discovered during this time. So this is where we start to see written music, written history that overlaps with the use of music and musical instruments and how it ties into their culture, such as Greek theater. Now, if we fast forward several thousand years to about the fall of the Roman Empire in 475-476 AD, that early Western classical music begins to originate. So if you know your history, after the fall of the Roman Empire, these next thousand years were known as the Dark Ages, where mankind essentially took a big step back in their culture, in their hygiene, in their ability to communicate together, in their infrastructure. Everything was just took a big punch to the face, and mankind was staggering for a little while. So this is where the earliest classical Western music, known as medieval music, starts to originate. And one of the most important things to realize during this era is that music and the church were linked almost explicitly. The church gained a lot of power right around the 9th and 10th century when their popularity exploded and they were able to start unifying their areas and unify the church. And this is when it really started to become Gregorian liturgy, and this is when there was Gregorian chant, and all of the music that was taking place was essentially just controlled by the church. If music is tied directly to a religion, this is called non-secular music. If music is not based off of an ancient religion or for to give glory to anything, then it is called sacred music. Kind of makes sense. Now, some of the big things to note in the medieval era is it lasted from about the year 500 to 1400. So nearly 1,000 years of the same kind of music. Okay, very little development, very little change. Medieval music can be characterized priorly as monophony, which means there is one single line of music. There is no harmony, there's no melody, there is just one piece of music. Which means if you have one singer or 100 singers, they would all be singing the same thing. This is where Gregorian chant came to be very, very popular. And again, in the 9th century, we saw our earliest form of polyphony, or polyphonic music. This means there's music with more than one line. So now we can start to see, after about 400 years of monophonic music, we start to see if two people can sing, they can sing two different parts. Now, we know that music was notated in previous eras and previous centuries, but another huge, huge step forward was that in this era, the first Western notation was reinvented, and it was we saw our very earliest form of our musical staff. These were called neumes, N-U-M-E-S. Now we move on a little bit into the Renaissance era, which was from about 1400 to 1600. And the biggest, biggest boon to music during this time was the invention of the printing press. Now, music was able to disseminate amongst multiple different countries. Wherever there was trade, you could expect music to travel. Before this time, when music was being handwritten by monks, if you wanted to spread your song, you had to physically travel after memorizing your piece of music, and then sing it to others. And if you wanted it to be spread further, they would have to memorize their piece of music and continue to sing it. So it was very, very difficult to spread songs. This is why folklore was so important and so much music was lost over the eras. Now, with the invention of the printing press, it was so much easier for a composer to actually have a job where he would write music not just for the church. He could write music of what he composed for himself. Now, Renaissance music is characterized with this lovely singable melody and balanced polyphony in all voices. So what that means is your melody is the most prominent aspect, but now we start to see secondary and third lines. We have more harmonies that are balanced, and it's not just one musical notation, one theme that's being sung by everybody. Next up, we have Baroque music. Baroque music was about 1580 to 1750. You'll notice there's a little bit of overlap with, if you're paying attention, from the Renaissance era, which ended in the year 1600. There's a little bit of transition time. So it's not just a flick of a switch. This, from the last 20 years of 1580 to 1600, we started to see the switch from Renaissance to Baroque music. Now, the Baroque era really saw our artistic style expand and flourish across Europe. Music expanded in range, and there was a lot more complex music going around. It really kind of began when the first operas, an opera is a dramatic solo with vocal music accompanied by an orchestra, and this was when some of the first operas were written. So think about all the complex new musical lines that composers are writing for these operas, for the big theater audiences. This is when many, many composers started traveling and writing pieces of music for profit. It's also important to note that many new forms of music, such as fugue, sonata, the concerto, everything started evolving during the Baroque era. And this starts to lead us towards the classical music era. And the classical music era can be characterized by homophonic texture with an obvious melody and accompaniment. And one of the interesting things that happened was that as music and instruments started to develop and more technology started to become invested into the arts, melodies started to shift away from being written only for a vocalist. The new melodies could be composed to be voice-like and very, very singable, but now because instruments such as the violin were being perfected, and then we had new woodwind and new brass instruments being invented, the music could become more singable, and the instrumentalists could play with such more advanced technique that they actually started replacing the singers. And then, thusly, opera died down a little bit. It was still quite popular, but instrumental music replaced opera, and instrumental music is where there is no vocalist attached. The classical era was from about 1750 until 1820. And then this leads us right into the Romantic era. And the Romantic era is one of my personal favorites. This is when music became much more expressive, much more emotional, and started to expand to encompass literature, art, and even philosophy, really. The first thing that we see is an explosion in the size of the orchestras. Many more instruments were being developed. We had timpanis, we had more percussion, we had even more woodwinds and brass instruments. And this allowed composers to compose bigger, more grandiose songs. Think of Beethoven's symphony. Imagine if something as large and as powerful as that was written for an instrument or an orchestra half its size. All of a sudden, much of that emotion, much of that power was greatly diminished. This was one of the things that characterized the Romantic era. We had much longer and much more complex musical works. And now, at the tail end of the Romantic era, which was from about 1820 to 1900s, there's one clear, very important invention that transitioned us out of the Romantic era into 20th and 21st century music, and that was the radio. What the radio did was it suddenly made music portable. There were vastly more ways to record music, there was more ways to listen to music, and there was a new worldwide media for music. This meant that there was new freedom and much wider experimentation with musical styles. Technology was being developed, so we started to see electronic music. Composers were no longer following the old norm set 400, 500 years ago. This was something that now amplification allowed guitarists to really toy around with. In this century, there's of course 20th and 21st century music, so 20th century is from 1900 to 1999. In this century, we see a lot of composers, such as rock bands, start to develop. There was a shift again. The Romantic era was highly focused on large orchestras with very few singers built on mass emotion. Now the 20th century, we see fewer musicians, and they are clumped together. We start to see the formation of modern day rock bands, and they are built on providing music with lyrics again. And then in the 21st century, well, it is still going on. Take a look around, listen from songs back in the year 2000s to the 2005s, 2010s, and 2015s. And then listen to last year's 2020 hits. And you can hear for yourself some of the big differences, some of the large changes that composers are going through. And even then, you can hear many of the same similarities that composers, which we can now call pop singers, are experimenting with. We have seen a huge change in music even in the past 100 years. And the exciting thing about music history is that all of technology is being developed faster every single day. So the experimentation efforts that rock bands such as the Beatles were doing in the 1900s, imagine what we could do in 10 or 20 or 30 years with other composers and other rock bands that choose that same form of experimentation. So thank you, everybody. I hope you learned something new. If you were ever curious to learn more about each of these, I can do an additional podcast episode, or you can always check out Music History. There's a very, very exciting stuff to learn out there. But as always, thank you for listening, and I will see you next time.